Welcome back to Normies Like Us, the podcast that reminds you it's hip to be square and patriotic. Buckle up, normies. We're going on a bug hunt. Freedom doesn't come free, so come on, you apes. You want to live forever? Together for Liberty, our life for Super Earth. It's a good day to die in a very special episode on Helldivers 2 and Starship Troopers. We're from Normies Like Us, and we say, kill them all.
And I say kill them all!
Who needs a knife in a nuke fight anyway?
Take back control of freedom.
Join the Helldivers.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I didn't do fucking shit!
You heard it up top. We're about to do some deadly drops. We're heading to Klendathu because we're talking Helldivers 2. We're talking Starship Troopers on a very special double up episode here. Normies Like Us with your hosts, Citizen Colin.
This is Mikey Rico. Only good bug's a dead bug.
And this is Jacob Rico, your little brother that tagged along on the platoon.
We're both from Buenos Aires. Yep.
That's right. Our hometown was destroyed. And the only good bug is a dead bug.
I say kill them all. Absolutely. And... you know, not just the Federation we're talking about. We're also talking about Super Earth today, correct? Because we're doing kind of a combo.
That's right.
A twofer.
Friend democracy.
That's right. Helldivers democracy all over.
Yes. The new gaming sensation that I know I've been playing a lot since it came out. Mike, I know you've been playing it a lot. Mm-hmm. We've been playing a lot with different friends of ours, like our friend of the pod, Adam, our other friend of the pod, Adam. And many other people.
Named Adam,
yeah.
But I guess that's the
Adam's
inspiration.
Roughnecks.
Yeah, Adam's Roughnecks, that's right. We're in his platoon. Bring it in, boys. But that's the kind of conversation, right? I think Helldivers 2 has really made a splash in the gaming scene lately. It's really kind of, it's supplanted Fortnite for a bit on the PlayStation for like most played games. So it's a big deal, but... it does draw a lot of inspiration from Starship Troopers, and there's been kind of a renewed interest in that movie.
That's because, right.
You know, the propagandizing and all that kind of super patriotism. Yeah.
Yes. It is very inspired by Starship Troopers, the 1996 Paul Verhoeven cult classic. Yeah. And I actually had the idea to do this episode a couple of weeks ago because partially, I think, due to the Helldivers coming out, and also because on Twitter, it seemed like a lot of people were watching Starship Troopers, maybe because of this game coming out, and there's a lot of discourse going on.
Was it on Netflix or something too? You know, sometimes that shit times out.
Yeah, but there's a lot of discourse online about mainly, you know, people not understanding, or some people not understanding the subtext or the satire of this movie. And, you know, media literacy, you know, it's at an all-time low. But
yeah, the further we go, the further into Idiocracy we get, it feels like, unfortunately. But
right,
you know,
but I'm excited to talk about it.
I am too, but I guess a little history, right? Because like, I guess on both these things, guys, like Colin, right, did you see Starship Troopers? Did you get the satire when you first saw it? You know, what point of your life did this kind of enter your sphere?
Yeah, and there's gonna be so much to talk about today, I feel like, and I feel like that big point of media literacy, you know, like understanding the content that you consume. That is a great question, Mike. I saw this super young. It was on MTV. I totally remember it. It was a TV broadcast, so it was definitely edited. I guarantee I missed first 15, 20 minutes, sat down by myself, thought, yo, I just saw the coolest sci-fi action movie ever made, and really left it at that. Like there, I took it completely at surface level of like, yo, this movie has naked chicks in the showers. This movie has bugs getting
co-ed
blown
showers.
Up.
Yeah.
Guys saying things like, fire the nukes, Rico's Roughnecks, woo-hoo, like all that shit that you like would want in like a B-grade movie, and starred like people that I kind of recognize because like Sleepy Hollow was a big movie in my house, so Casper Van Dien, and then
Doogie Howser,
Ina Mayer. But I'll tell you, Neil Patrick Harris actually no Doogie Howser, like we none of that stuff.
Sure.
But Ina Mayer, fucking Dragonheart, that fucking Sean Connery talking dragon movie, was so huge in my house that we loved her. She's the female lead of that film. So, like, I was primed to watch this.
Nice, nice, nice. How about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I saw it when I was a little bit older, so I definitely knew what was going on at that point. But I just want to talk about also Paul Verhoeven as a director himself. Just, you know, sort of super underrated and underappreciated in his time. And this movie, like Showgirls before it, was really hated when it came out because people didn't understand it at the time. I think it's sort of been reclaimed. But I definitely saw it in that post. It's already considered sort of a cult classic when I saw it. And I knew the whole, you know, subtext of it and everything. And I'd already seen RoboCop and Showgirls and stuff. But I just think Paul Verhoeven is like a really great director who's really good at making these super schlocky, over the top satires, kind of like Showgirls.
Yeah, RoboCop is similar to that too.
Yeah,
literally staring up at my RoboCop poster as we do this. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about it and to talk about maybe your guys' history with Paul Verhoeven as a director. Yeah. And yeah,
there's a lot of fun stories with him we'll get into in the episode proper for sure. But definitely underrated. We've never done a RoboCop episode, so maybe there'll be more Paul Verhoeven in the future. But I saw the Starship Troopers when it came out, like probably just on video, though. I didn't see it in theaters, but we rented it or something, and I just took it at face value originally. And then, you know, I'd see it years on, like in college, and you're like, oh, this is like actually really sharp. But I was just like, guns, bugs, and boobs, baby. You know, I was like, all right.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with Verhoeven is that you can take his movies at service value and they're still really entertaining just as over the top movies. Oh, yeah. But yeah, he had a run there. We'll talk about it. I'm excited.
Yeah, we'll get into it. But let's before we jump in, dive in, let's say Helldivers then, because this is the other thing we're going to be doing. Colin, have you played this all? Have you seen some gameplay? I never played the first one. I'm starting here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I that feels like it came out of absolutely nowhere, Mike, because to see something trend and for Jacob to pitch this episode where I did it, I'd already seen like a headline or two and like a post on like our video games in Reddit. That's like, yo, look at this Helldiver 2 killer, whatever, where I'm like a video game with a 2 in it that I don't know about. That's interesting. That's extremely popular. And then it just catches on and catches on.
Yeah,
had never played it before. Surprisingly, shockingly, did not get to watch you guys play it at all. But I have now consumed a ton of like Twitch and YouTube footage, so I've gotten a pretty good familiar grasp of the gameplay.
Yeah,
well, I think that's the thing with Helldivers. With Helldivers, is that you haven't played the first one. I don't think anyone's played the first one, or a very small.
Not a single person.
I mean, it's completely. It's a different kind of game.
Not
it's
that old. Even
they changed the kind of game it is, because Helldivers 1 is a top-down twin-stick shooter rather than a third-person over-the-shoulder co-op shooter like Helldivers 2. So it's
like a different kind of game. Vibe.
Yeah, same lore and same aesthetics, but totally different kind of game. And I think it's similar to Baldur's Gate 3, where if you could probably count, you know, there's probably millions of people that have played Baldur's Gate 3 that never played and Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, which were maybe a little bit better known than Helldivers 1, but still, they were so long ago that most people haven't played them.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but Helldivers 2, I just want to say, like, it was kind of a surprise hit. Kind of came out of nowhere for me anyway. It's like, you know, Power World came out around the same time. Right. I started playing Power World, and I was really into that for a minute. And then when Helldivers came out, I didn't buy it right away, but I knew you were playing it, Mike, and Adam was playing it, and some of our other friends, and I'm like, this looks pretty cool. I might have to get into this. And then the you know, word of mouth on this game was so good. Everyone who's played it has just raved about it. So I was like, I got to try it. And it was $40. So I bought it. And since then, I have not even ever booted up Pal World again after getting Helldivers. So
yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, sorry to all my pals that I left abandoned.
It's all right because,
come back,
you know,
to us, Jacob. Make us work in the mines again.
Yeah, there's probably a part of the Federation that would Pal World and have them slave in the mines, you know?
That's right.
The bugs are back, Jacob. They feast on us.
That's
but
right.
But Pal World, like Helldivers, is a game that's really meant to be played co-op. And because I didn't have any friends that were playing Pal World, it got kind of old. Whereas Helldivers, all my friends were playing it. All my friends that I used to play Halo with or other games online. It's a really great co-op multiplayer game. It's like one of the best gaming experiences I've had playing with other people. So
Yeah, wow. And it inspired us to rewatch a great movie, I'd say. So
Fuck yes.
Let's get in our hell pods and drop right into it, I say. Let's talk Starship Troopers / Helldivers 2 right after this, Our Life for Super Earth.
So we're back here on Normies Like Us, where we're about to fight the scourge of these bugs for democracy, spread that democracy here on Normies Like Us, talking Helldivers, talking Starship Troopers. Where I want to start is, because obviously you guys put this together, the critics, the fans put this together. Hey, why do these things seem kind of similar? And it turns out a lot of stuff is also similar to this. I want to start here and say, are you guys familiar with the Robert Heinlein book, Starship Troopers? Have you guys read that book?
I haven't read it. I know I knew about it, and I know the author, Robert Heinlein, who also did The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, another another sci-fi book. Yeah. He was a sci-fi writer in the 50s.
Bad movie. Yes.
Yeah.
Stranger in a Strange Land, I think, is him as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a very, say, right-leaning libertarian sci-fi author. So there's a lot of those kind of themes in his book. And that's so the book compared to the movie, I'll say the book is not a satire. It's played completely straight.
Right.
And so Paul Verhoeven took that and said, well, I believe he didn't even read the book because he found it boring.
Threw it away. Threw it in the trash. Yeah. Said it was fascist garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if you've got...
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I have not read the book.
I have not.
Robert Heinlein, Vietnam vet, basically in the same way that the guy who came back who wrote First Blood, actually, I don't believe he even went to Vietnam, but had a reaction to that trauma of going like, I got to just write something. Robert Heinlein like, made like these sci-fi like fascist crazy books that are like very interesting. Now I thought I had read one of his books because I have read The Forever War, whatever that is. That is not him. I found out
Chris Pratt, The Tomorrow War.
Well, The Tomorrow War, yes. But I Googled it. I don't know if you guys know that Forever War. It's this book about like these it's about time dilation. You're constantly being shipped back from the planet you're at war with. So when you get back to Earth, people are like, we're still at war? Like, I can't believe you still even like are fighting that cause, man. Like, it's a very like Vietnam-based book, right? Now, I looked it up. It is a different writer. That guy was inspired to write that book because he loved Starship Troopers.
Oh, sure.
Now, here is the other thing. Mike texts us, hey, I'm going to watch all this other supplemental stuff. And Mike, I'm very excited to hear the deep dive you went into. You pointed out to us that there's a 1980s anime OVA 6 episode of Starship Troopers. Did any of you guys also check that out?
I watched 3 episodes. I couldn't finish it. But 1988, and I was like, damn, because this is 1996, the movie. I'm like, I had no idea this property existed until the movie. Like, I didn't know about the book at all. You know,
that's just based on the book before the movie.
And here's the thing. Yeah. It edits some stuff down, but it's also kind of beat for beat exactly this movie, Mike, in that it's about Johnny Rico in love with this woman named Carmen and like doing these things.
Carmencita.
Now, here's the thing, Jacob. The Robert Heinlein book, and this is the reason that I want to talk about all this, to talk about the things that this book has fucking inspired. It's fucking incredible. I'm so excited to talk about this and point this out. This OVA and anime, Jacob, is obsessed with power armor, like armor that people wear, like what Master Chief would wear, because the 1960s Robert Heinlein book is the first work in science fiction media to ever mention battle armor, like power battle armor. So anime in Japan becomes obsessed with this book, and this book and that anime, Mike, inspired Gundam. Like,
that's insane.
It goes on to have this domino effect of the incredible things that this fucking sci-fi book inspires. It's awesome. Right.
So, well, I should say, without the book, there's no Evangelion.
Yeah.
No.
That's insane. Like,
power armor is not in the movie, though, very strangely. But yes.
No, it's in the third movie, but we'll get there anyway.
Yes.
Maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. But yeah, Robert Heinlein.
John Tyson.
you know, as an author, he is, as a sci-fi author, he's one of the most respected and influential of that era. I mean, he's peers with Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke and people like that, Philip K. Dick. So it's like Blade Runner being inspired by, you know, the Philip K. Dick original story, what, you know, the Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. Yes.
It would be like if Ben Shapiro was good at what he did. Like if a conservative actually came up with interesting ideas.
Well, and I don't agree with him politically, but I think there are good, there's been good conservative art in the past. And I think maybe this is one, but like with, you know, some, he's invented phrases like there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you ever heard that phrase before,
what?
Robert Heinlein invented that. Yeah.
What?
He just said, he's like, here's an idea. Here's what I'll just, let me,
that does sound like a conservative phrase.
It's
though,
a very, yeah, it's a libertarian thing. Like, yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
I actually hate it now that we're analyzing it and saying it out loud.
But it's like, Isaac Asimov was definitely more left leaning and most of the sci-fi writers that period were, but he's definitely a different perspective on things. Not that I necessarily agree with him, but this book is very straightforward. It's very nationalistic. And I think it was sort of his response to the Vietnam War, but he saw it more as like, yeah, we need to double down on nationalism.
We need to use nukes. We need to destroy our enemies completely.
Our soldiers were not committed enough, right?
Oh no.
Right. And that's fascinating because also, like, if you look at it the other way, like, there's no RoboCop without power armor. Like, what a circle, man.
Well, Total Recall. I mean, that whole, again, the Philip K. Dick and the Isaac Asimov, of course, it is a different sci-fi writer. But just the idea that, like, I don't know, man, there's so much masculinity tied with technology, tied with sci-fi that I'm very excited to talk about today that I think is a standout thing that makes, to back to Jacob's point, Paul Verhoeven very unique in a way that, like, the Zack Snyder stuff we're watching now is not interesting, but is kind of trying to be this stuff, right?
Yeah, he's like if Paul Verhoeven didn't have any of the political subtext. It was
did
just,
not have introspection.
This looks cool.
They believe in God in the same way. They are both like reborn Christians.
Oh, sure.
So. Interesting. Yeah. Well, that'll explain the whole movie, even though it has nothing to do with him.
Right. We should also mention, not only is this Paul Verhoeven, but his collaborator, Ed Neumeier, right?
Yes.
Who wrote this movie, he wrote RoboCop. Yeah.
Do you guys know Ed Neumeier's story? Because there's, if you look at his credits, the gap is he wrote RoboCop in like 1980, whatever. He wrote Starship Troopers in 1996. Oh, sure.
He's involved
huge
with the
cocaine addiction.
I'm interested to hear Mike's perspective on the sequels because he, I believe, directed the second and third movies wrote the second movie, directed and wrote the third movie.
Correct.
Well, and can I point out the last creative force then? Because, yes, if you like this franchise, not that Paul Verhoeven persists, but the fact that, exactly like Jacob said, the writer writes the second film and writes and directs the third film. Mm-hmm. The second film is directed by the guy who does the special effects for this first movie. It's Phil Tippett, who is the Star Wars genius who comes up with like the fucking chess game and stuff, like the miniature stop motion genius.
Right.
This is at a time like this film, guys, is at a time. It is right between Jurassic Park, where is the death of practical effects and the rise of CGI, where you get like the greatest merging of special effects of all time, because it is true geniuses using this stuff and artists using this stuff.
And I wanted to mention that's really stood out to me too, how well they blend CG with practical effects in this movie. And yeah, it looks great.
The starships are 18-foot miniatures. I want everybody to know that. The miniature work in
this
was
at a time when like Star Trek was switching from miniatures to CG with Voyager and then Enterprise and stuff. But Paul Verhoeven, super interesting guy, just as, you know, a director, his career, he's a Dutch filmmaker, started, you know, working in the Netherlands. And then
that's why he uses so many,
you know,
Dutch
got noticed. Right.
Yes.
That's a feeling.
Like Dutch people, he sort of has that sort of like soft J accent. So he talks sort of like this if you listen to his commentary tricks. Very interesting.
This was an interesting connection with last week. You know, we're talking about Dune, talking about David Lynch. Mm-hmm. So David Lynch, obviously, George Lucas wanted him to direct Return of the Jedi in 1982 mm-hmm. or three, right?
Right.
He turned that down, later did Dune. Another person, well, the main person that George Lucas, of course, wanted was his best friend, Steven Spielberg, to direct.
Right.
Steven mm-hmm. Spielberg turned it down, but said, hey, check out this Paul Verhoeven guy. He's a Dutch filmmaker. He hadn't yet done his first English language film, I don't think, at this point. Mm-hmm. But he's like, check this out. So George Lucas was like, okay, looked in, he was like, and then George Lucas said, I don't know, like he's too provocative for me.
Yeah.
So Paul mm-hmm. Verhoeven almost, you know, was offered the job for Return of the Jedi. So there's an interesting connection there with last week.
I didn't expect it to run this deep, but it's like, you know, because George Lucas also, we're talking about creating the modern language of sci-fi. He's borrowing from Dune, making it kind of more digestible. And like right. all these things, even Phil Tippett, you know, he said, I become extinct when he saw the T-Rex
yes, computer thing. The like, greatest quote of all time.
Right? Yeah. You know? And to complete the cycle, you know, Paul Verhoeven, when he was making this movie, said that he was inspired by Star Wars. Like he wanted to make a sci-fi movie like Star Wars. So he made Starship
wow.
Troopers.
Wow.
But just look at this run. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to say on Starship yeah. Troopers, because the book was conservative. He would say, like, I want to make something that's so over the top satire that it cannot be missed. And people yes. still missed it, but that's walked
yeah,
around.
Yeah, bummer.
Well, that's the funny thing is that he tried to read the book, said, this is too boring. It's too conservative. I don't like it. He had yeah. Ed Neumeier, the screenwriter, read the book and then summarize it for him, basically. And that's yeah. how they got the script for this movie.
Ed Neumeier had, important to point out, had separately written a screenplay called Bug Hunt at Station 9 or Station Whoa. 19 or yeah, something like
or
that.
Outpost 9,
and,
something like that.
Outpost 9, something mm-hmm. like that. And literally when he's given the script of like, what would you do with the Starship Troopers? Ed Neumeier says, I'm not kidding. I wrote this other screenplay based on how much I like that book. So I'm the perfect guy to break this down. So again, right. people wow. love that fucking book.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Awesome.
But Paul Verhoeven, starting with the 80s, I mean, he was making, like I said, Dutch language films, a lot of sexual content, things like that, very provocative. Mm-hmm. Then he got his big break. Well, he made Flesh and Blood in 1985 with Rutger Hauer.
Kind of sucks.
And that was yes. his first English language film. Wasn't a huge success. But then, of course, yeah. in 87, he made RoboCop. And that kind of
rules.
Catapulted him into yeah. a different stratosphere as a director. Mm-hmm. So he could take on more projects now. But this run from 87 to 97, right? This decade, he did RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls, and Starship Troopers.
Wow.
Ten-year run.
Literally the core thesis to every one of those films is he's making fun of American consumerism and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting.
I mean, RoboCop, buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Showgirls is a super over the top look at commercialism and everything. And was totally hated upon release and was considered one of the worst movies. It got nominated for Razzies and all this, all because people didn't understand the over the top satire. They just took it straight. And that's kind of what happened with this film too.
He's too good at it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's satire is too sharp. You don't even realize you've been cut by it. Yeah. Incredible.
Because he's able to make satires that also work that are just so entertaining that people are like, this is so crazy. Like, does this guy really mean it? Or is
like,
he?
Yeah. Mike, when you're watching, you know, fucking RoboCop get littered with bullets and explode, yeah. it's hard to think of subtext because your lizard brain as right. a viewer, you're like, oh, I just love fucking watching RoboCop blow up. This is great.
No, just the, that's like the most squibs ever used in a single shot. You know, it's like, yeah, there's some crazy stuff you do. So it's like, it's just overwhelming you. But,
yeah,
I guess to summarize, I guess what this is then, because we were talking about it, it's giant bug hunt. It is. It's space yeah. bugs. There's the Federation. They have like a military force that they're recruiting constantly to go and fight the bugs, the enemy of the Federation, you know, but it's how much is propaganda? How much is it? But that's right. kind of the basic setup for and our characters, Johnny Rico, joining the military.
I was going to say, Mike, now, which property are you talking about today?
Exactly.
That sounded like you were pitching something right. else.
Yeah. Well, Helldivers yeah. is very, very, very inspired by this movie, which we'll talk about later. Yeah. But yeah, just at the beginning of this film, you know, the teaching scene, they're talking about, oh, democracy failed. We had to institute a military, basically a military
authoritarian
those dictators.
Maniacs with their social sciences is what he says. Had to bring it to the limit.
Which, you know, this movie was made in 1996. You could remake this movie and just change that to like woke
these
diversity.
Woke bastards. Yeah.
And it would make the same amount of sense. And what's funny is this whole movie is sort of presented as a propaganda movie within this universe where they keep cutting to these different like newsreels and things like that.
It's the framing device.
And by the end of it, you know, Johnny Rico has become the, you know, like the captain, like he was at first, he's going through boot camp and all this stuff. But yeah, I think, first of all, I just want to say, I love this film. It's brilliant and it's so fun to watch. So I'm excited to talk about it.
It's super fun. You know, we're going to spoilers for 1996, seven, whatever the release was, Starship Troopers guys. But, yeah, it was a ton of fun to rewatch it. And I don't know. Yeah, Colin, how do you feel right now? And I'm just into it.
Like what happens, Mike? Is it the same for you as it is for me when you're renting it that first time? Like you said, like I said, we take it at face value.
Yeah.
Is it then the subsequent showings? Because to me, it becomes a rental. It becomes a Blockbuster staple. If I'm at somebody else's house, I'm like, have you seen Starship Troopers? Typically the answer is no. Because people did not like the cast of these basically like Beverly Hills 90210, you know.
Again, it was a box office bomb.
Teens. It was a huge
failure upon release.
Yeah. We would rent it and we'd kind of watch it. And that's when the discussion would start of like, oh, I think there's kind of more going on there. Like, is that what it was for you? Would somebody else bring it up or did you kind of come to it yourself eventually?
I think it's just one of those things. Like you watch it and like, you know, when we watch it when we're like in our early teens or something, so you're just gonna watch like the guns and shit, you know, but
yeah, you don't pick up on all older the details. And you watch it,
then you're thinking about the human characters and like it's you start to sympathize and like, whoa, this is kind of fucked up what's happening, like you just kind of start to realize that I think is
here's what it is. I honest to God think it is like I'm watching it for the fifth time. I show it to my brother. It gets to the scene where the guy says, you know, so-and-so infantry. That made me the man I am.
The guy with no limbs.
Hand, kid. Yeah. He wheels out. He only has one physical hand. You see that the rest of him is robotic. I remember my brother being like, yo, that's kind of fucked up.
Right,
I think
right.
that is literally like the turnkey moment where you sort of like almost mature in your mind of like, wait, is this movie kind of fucked up?
Yeah. Or like, is it like, is it just like a dark joke or is this now a set? Like, it's like, oh, Yeah. Light bulb.
Well, there's a lot of like throwaway lines and details about the world that you're like, oh, maybe this isn't so great. And I think the sort of unsaid subtext of the whole film is that basically we're losing the war. Like we instigated this war with the bugs. Yes. They retaliated and now we're losing badly to the point where they're recruiting kids, you know, by the end when, you know, you're seeing the new recruits in Rico's Roughnecks and it's like little kids and stuff. You're like, oh, they're running out of troops because they keep dying. Yeah. So much.
And Paul Verhoeven's first pitch for this movie was he wanted to cast 15-year-olds, actual 15-year-olds, because he thought that would really sell home the like, oh, my God, this is the horrors of fucking war.
And of course,
that would be crazy.
The cast that he did get. Yeah. Is basically, I mean, Casper Van Dien is like Hitler's
wet
dream.
This is film debut. Talk about a little Dutch boy. He's not. He has Dutch heritage, of course.
He's the Aryan image. Yeah.
Well, he's married to the princess of Yugoslavia. Like this little dandy boy has got on to have quite the interesting little life. Obviously did not become a movie star, but was in like Sleepy Hollow.
Came back for the third movie, which I'll talk about.
Yeah, well, Mike, that's like a huge blow to his career.
Well,
like,
oh, you know.
No. Oh, sure.
Johnny Rico's back.
Well, look at the – I mean, just look at the cast. You got him. You got Denise Richards.
Mm-hmm.
You got little NPH in his Nazi trench coat.
Yeah.
His psychic Nazi trench coat.
Meyer.
Yeah. They're all these like Aryan ideal people, right? You know, blonde hair. Type people.
We covered Johnny Mnemonic on this podcast. That's when we would have seen Dina Meyer before. She obviously plays his bodyguard. Sure,
yeah, we've mentioned it in some cyberpunk discussions. Yep. But absolutely.
Yeah, and of course he's pining after Denise Richards when he's got Dina Meyer right there, like
Izzy
throwing
Flores
herself at him,
pouring out for the Diz.
Come on, Diz! Like you know, fucking Denise Richards doesn't want you.
Let me tell you, Jacob, confused 13-year-old watching this movie who after that shower scene was like, just go with her. Like, what are you doing?
He's too in love with Carmen.
That's the most tragic character in this is Diz for sure. You know, like
After watching this whole movie, pining after Johnny Rico, and then dies, and then says, "It was all worth it though because I had you."
I mean, I cringe when you're getting the tattoos, let alone when she's dying. Yeah, the whole. I mean, Mike, it's terrible.
She signed up for Johnny. He ignores her, and then she fucking dies. They do hook up, but it's like, man, you were just going to be educated. Friend you were zone. The smart one.
I heard this was the real badass troop. Is that right? Get out of here.
Jesus. Yeah. So pouring out for the Dizzler, like I said.
Jake Busey. Let's keep going on this cast. Jake Busey's here.
Yep. We love Frightener.
Jake Busey is insane. I mean, you can immediately tell that he's Gary Busey's son because he looks exactly like Gary Busey.
Son or clone?
yeah.
Oh, homunculus that he sort of like brought to life that somehow like spawned Busey returned.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You got Clancy Brown. You got Michael Ironside, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah. We got Breaking Bad.
In Total Recall.
Breaking Bad, Dean Norris.
Dean Norris also in Total Recall. Yeah.
Oh, basically, so this movie starts out, right? It's very All Quiet on the Western Front, right? If you've seen that before, the new version on Netflix, it's mm-hmm. about these young kids that are super enthusiastic and gung-ho about joining the military. They get to the military, you know, they go through boot camp and everything, and then they get to the military. It's not what they expected, and they're just like traumatized by
a fucking nightmare. Yeah,
the experience. So it's very All Quiet on the Western Front.
He said it's based on the Goebbels propaganda film, the Nazi film.
Lenny Reifenstahl, Triumph of the Will. Lenny Reifenstahl was the Nazi, like the leader of the Nazi film department, mm-hmm. who basically would make these Nazi propaganda films like Triumph of the Will. Mm-hmm. A lot of the shots and composition in this movie are like straight out of Triumph of the Will. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
Very wild. Yeah. And there's a lot of editing techniques that, you know, came from that propaganda style of filmmaking.
Like Leni Riefenstahl was a Nazi, so not good, but
we don't love her work, but
she was a talented filmmaker, right?
There was technique happening. Yeah. But we didn't approve of it.
Watch Inglourious Basterds. They talk about her movies.
But way to pull off that, like to use that imagery when you're filming your space fascism satire, right? Like that's very good.
Here's the thing. Post, I think it was Flesh and Blood. Paul Verhoeven had a conversation in Hollywood where basically they were like, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do while you're here in America? Mm. And he was like, I have this image in my head that I can't get over. And it's four beautiful young teenagers, black and white photography. They're in a convertible, two girls in the back, two guys in the front, young, good looking, hair blowing in the wind. They're laughing, driving on the highway. They pull up to a bar. They go inside. They have dinner. They're dancing. They have the best night ever. We love them. They're our heroes. They get back to the car. They put on their Nazi hats and they go to work. And he always wanted to trick an audience into thinking, these are our heroes. I've got you. Ha ha ha. That's how easily you can be tricked by propaganda. So that is easy. And obviously everyone in Hollywood was like, we will never let you make that movie. And so he's had this card in his pocket his entire career, and he's finally getting to play that card. It's very interesting to see what he's doing here, right?
Yeah. And like his whole point is that like until they put on the Nazi hats, you're like, oh, this is like the American ideal. These young
They're just like you.
Kids, yeah. And so he's kind of saying like America today, America of the 90s, is not that far from like Nazi Germany in terms of, you know, fascism and stuff. It's not a long journey down that road that could lead to fascism.
Right. And he really does kind of, I mean, there's a lot of jokes happening throughout this movie, but it really doesn't, it's not until the very, very end that he really kind of pulls the rabbit out of the hat with, you know, It's Afraid and Rico like buying into the propaganda to become like the face of it. Like he's really showing like, you get absorbed into this.
They do that brilliant sort of 1984 thing, Mike, or that the thing current fascists do now, the weak, strong enemy, where our enemy is either weak or
both weak
strong.
And strong at the same time.
The same cocktail, where it's And that thing, Mike, where literally you have the language in this of like these brainless bugs, they don't know anything, we're going to kill them all, to, well, they mastermind dropping, you know, that asteroid on Buenos Aires, you know, these bastards, we need to wipe them out, this race, they think, they do fear. I mean, it's, again, they're that is, yes, that is the nail in the coffin moment that he's leaving you with of like, when you watch these people in literal Nazi uniforms in a crowd laugh as they are terrorizing this thing that says it is scared of them, you are supposed to leave this film thinking like, wait, what was all this? What did I just cheer for? What?
Yeah,
it was
right.
Those were bad guys.
Familiar with Umberto Eco's essay, Fascism, where he sort of lays out the, like, 10 or I think 14 points of what makes a society fascist, essentially.
Oh, I'm not interested.
I've seen some of the cliff notes, the othering, that kind of stuff, right?
It's essentially what you're saying, like the contempt for the weak. Your enemy is like super weak, but also like this, you know, super strong at the same time.
So threatening, be scared, right.
Yeah. And the othering of the enemy and all that kind of thing. But that he wrote that in 1995. So I'd be interested to know if Verhoeven even saw that while he was like making the movie.
Good. I like this.
Yeah. And to like use bugs, obviously. I mean, it was in the book, but it's like to throw all that imagery on it. It's like an easy analog because they're using essentially slurs and shit. Like if it was humans, it's like the only good bug is a dead bug. Like if you put that on like another population, it's like it's clear to see that these are the bad guys.
They are taught in school. They are known as the pseudo arachnids. Basically, everyone in this is like, you mean bugs?
Have like that Fox News clip essentially where the experts are talking about it, and they're like, a bug that can think, that's just offensive to me to even think that bugs could have a brain and stuff like that. They're like othering the enemy so much.
The brain.
Super reductive. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that is just like super on point.
And the self-righteousness of like, we're on this like crusade almost. Like we're destined to win even though we started the problem and we won't
admit
to, like,
we started it. Yeah. We didn't expect the retaliation to be as strong as it was. That's what's so funny is they go through all this propaganda and the boot camp and everything. Their first mission, they get absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh shit, this is a lot harder than we thought.
Yeah. Because they're just thought we're the righteous victors. And so, when they see war, it's not like that.
Let's talk bugs then for a second. Yeah. What do you guys think of the practical effects of the bugs? Now, I guess we'll talk Helldivers at the end. Obviously, there's very similar between the big crawly sort of mandibly ones. But the big video game connection to me, I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I was like, those are the Zerg. I was so much like, this is like StarCraft the movie. I was so excited.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if they were inspired by the book too. Like space bugs.
I would be willing. The fact that they're space marines and robo armor, Mike. Like I have to be willing to bet that they're
Warhammer. All that.
Also, we should say James Cameron's Aliens. He was super inspired by Robert Irwin's book.
Oh, sure.
And he takes literal quotes from the book. Oh, the only good bug is a dead bug, and calling bugs and stuff.
So. And and even the marines and aliens are very similar to the marines in this. Mm-hmm. But in Helldivers, the bugs are very inspired by the look of the bugs in this movie. Very, very inspired to the point of like, basically Helldivers, great game, but it's stealing a lot of, I wouldn't call it plagiarism necessarily, but it's very inspired by a lot of things, including
it's the full Terminator world of space bug fascist shooters.
But full spectrum, do you get sort of the soldier mandibly ones, the beetles that shoot stuff, and then the brain bugs?
You do. You get the spitters. Basically, similar ideas. You have spitters that shoot acid.
Big,
you have
ones that have
the chargers, which are kind of like the big ones, and you have bile titans, which are like a big version of like some of the smaller leggy ones. But even the basic soldier ones are like very inspired by the basic bugs in this. They don't really have a brain bug like they do in this movie, but they do have a lot of similar designs.
Well, thinking bug. I'm insulted, right? Not in
right,
not no. Super Earth, right?
Yeah.
But I love the practical effects, so I like the look of them with the mandibles, especially the general soldiers. And when you first see them destroy their squad, like they're really intimidating too. Like they do a good job of establishing.
Yeah, they can cut you in half.
Terrifying.
They can
bite
your limbs off and shit.
Check it out. For the time this movie was made, there is an exorbitant amount of bugs on screen the same time, say, how is that done? Now, some of these are miniature work. Some of these are model work. Some of those are scanned and then rendered inside as digital effects. Now, check this out. When this movie was being made, to fully render one frame with the special effects of the bugs took 32 hours a frame.
Oh, my God.
To render 32 hours a frame. Right. So they come up with this incredible new technology that essentially turns the bug animations that they have into pixel sprites. So in the same way that, like, when you're assigning sprites to a, like, video game, they can literally drag and drop thousands of the bugs in the background, pre-set up with the lighting and stuff, and then just have it play out, have a few good hero bugs in the front to draw your eye away from it, and it makes the special effects look filled in and great. And it's awesome.
Yeah, those group scenes look really good. I mean, this is 1996. This is before Lord of the Rings. If you remember, Lord of the Rings had that big technology where they could have a million Uruk-hai.
Yes, the CAPS program, which is fucking incredible. Yeah.
And that was, this was like 6 years before that, and they're doing that. I mean, and then just the mixture of practical effects and the CG where they, you know, they use real bug goo, which I think really helps. Like, these soldiers are just getting splattered with goo.
Well, and when they're getting their brains eaten, like that guy when he does, and when they're sort of touching in, that is also a huge practical thing full of weird the fluid, brain like bug, you're saying, Jacob.
Is a practical, and a lot of the close-ups of the bugs, but they seamlessly kind of cut back and forth between CG. And I really didn't notice, like, it all just looked really good, especially for being 1996. I mean, compare some of the movies that were coming out in the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, this looks amazing.
Yeah, and I feel like I probably haven't seen this in HD before this viewing, and it looks great. Like, it does stand up, you know, because it was like a VHS or whatever on TV. So to see it in HD holding up, I was like, damn. And I think what people are missing now is, like, it's not a mix of practical and CG. It's just all CG.
Yeah.
Whereas Dune, like, they built a big part of the sandworm, and, like, they're doing a great mixture of practical and CG to where it's seamless, sort of like,
More movies should do that, but it's just cheaper, I think, to do all CG now. But the CG usually doesn't look as good in close up.
Yeah. There's matte paintings in this movie. Like, it gets as hands on nitty gritty as it can get. And again, Mike, like, what I'm saying is, like, they hired the people who knew how to do these things. Like, it's not even just that mix of doing the two things anymore. People don't know how to do the practical side anymore. Like, they just job-wise don't know how to do it. It's so unfortunate.
Like, the people who know how, like, there's not money. Like, no one's getting trained to do like that. It's a dying art, unfortunately. It's sort of like Jim Henson's puppetry and stuff. Like, people do it for the passion, but it's not paying the bills like it used to. So it's
You're working
not efficient. McDonald's. It's not cost-effective.
Oh, yeah.
But it,
you'd rather go. People go into CG effects instead because it's just so much cheaper.
You can farm it out, overseas.
Treat the workers like shit. And
exactly. Yeah. No, we need a renaissance of practical effects because this again, Phil Tippett, man, the goat. One of the goats, you know. Anyway,
you can see that weird
that this movie didn't do
He directed a stop motion movie called Mad God 2 years ago, 1 year ago. Finally, did you ever see that? I never did.
I haven't seen it.
Be curious.
Shout it out.
Yeah, I do think it's just sad that this movie didn't do well because this is kind of the end of Paul Verhoeven's reign. Like, he made movies after this. He's still working, I think. And he made, like, the movie Black Book in 2006, but he just probably wasn't getting the budgets that he wanted and the projects that he wanted after this because of the back-to-back failures commercially of Showgirls and Starship Troopers, just like kind of.
It's just art house fair. He just made Benedetta 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. No, but the 90s, like his sensibility is like the satire of the 90s culture, I think, is a perfect, like, the right thing at the right time. And then we kind of have similar, like, you know, that was like Wall Street and like big money, yuppie shit, you know, like we're kind of in that mode again. So like this movie kind of really holds up, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. I think it holds up super well.
It holds up super well, but I don't like that it's quite as reflective of the real world that I live in. Like, it's
no, you know,
that's sad, but it's a fun movie to watch otherwise.
And the 90s were kind of like, people look back with nostalgia to the 90s, partially because that's when a lot of people were growing up like us, but also like that was the last really innocent time in America before a lot of bad shit happened. And we got kind of been like, oh, like shit's bad now. but it was all happening in the 90s. It was just sort of covered up by this commercialism and media culture that we had at the time where like everything's great. Like economically, America's doing great. We're not in any like big wars right now. Like things are going great. And then
came out of the 80s. I'll use my credit card.
9/11 happened. And yeah.
I hope nobody gets a blowjob in the office. Oh, wait, what? Oh, no.
That was our biggest problem back then.
Yeah.
Here's my issue, Jacob. I don't think this movie will have lasting staying power because I think the way audiences consume this stuff, there's just not really like a star for them to grab onto. And if you told like a Zoomer or a Gen Z kid like right now, like you'll love this. The irony of the fascism is so strong. I think they would be so turned off from the fact that they're like, well, I live that. Like, why would I, you know, need to consume, you know, something that like makes fun of, like you're saying, like why it worked in the 90s was because we're all like, can you imagine if things were that bad? That would be crazy.
Yeah.
Well, they never will be. Wink.
Yeah. It's a little too familiar with what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, like in the world of Starship Troopers, like military service guarantees citizenship, right? So that's like a big reason why people join the military, because you can be a citizen, you can get have different rights where like
you get to vote. Only
you can citizens vote.
Can vote. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't you need like a license to have a baby and stuff like that that you can't get if you're not.
We in the real world we have conservatives like literally saying things like, well, only people who own houses and land should be allowed to vote. Like what you know, like what are these other people and like literally now, like people are saying those things.
Right.
Like, it's so reflective. It's so
when I was thinking
how easy it is to have a kid, you know, on the
license.
Like come on.
And obviously America doesn't have a mandatory draft right now, which is definitely good. But I was thinking about like, oh, what kind of fascist country would demand that all of its citizens serve in the military? There's one that I can think of currently that's in the Middle East, has a Star of David on its flag, hint, hint. But
I was going to say, obviously, Ukraine, everyone has mandatory service right now to protect themselves, of course. So right.
Well, yeah, that's if you're being invaded by Russia, it's a little different. But
Israel, we're all just one horrible thing away, unfortunately. Yes.
Yeah, Israel does demand service of their service-aged citizens in the IDF, which is, and you can go to jail if you don't serve there. So
even if you're Wonder Woman.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Korea has that too. It's like 2 years minimum, whatever, South Korea. So
even if you're in a K-pop band.
It's true. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, the K-pop people try to get out of it too. And it's a big controversy sometimes.
Yeah, see,
but now you wouldn't do that if you were a citizen of the Federation fighting the bugs. They're just glorious fight. You would sign up like Rico. He says, I'm not going on vacation. I'm going to the military. It's literally
what do you think? What do you think about the dad saying like, oh, I'd prefer to take 10 lashes than you doing that, Mike.
Right. No, and
like they seem rich and yet he could still be punished by society.
He's from a rich family in Buenos Aires. They want him to go to Harvard, and he says, no, I'm not going to fucking Harvard. I'm joining the military
because
I was propagandized by my social studies teacher.
Because I was literally a conservative horror nightmare. Our teachers are like using like classes recruitments, basically. Yeah. Horrible.
Right. And then he's, you know, he also wants to go because Carmen's going. She's going to be in.
Yes, that's the main reason.
So it's like dumb reasons. So again,
what if we got you 2 tickets to the Outer Rim?
But it is similar to
Zamazar.
It's a even in the 2000s, the way the military would recruit and they would use predatory practices to recruit people out of high school and promise things like, you know, obviously there are some good, you know, for some people it is a good option to join the military, but they say, oh, we'll pay for your college, you know, you'll be set up for life and all this stuff, and then you know, a lot of their promises, they don't work out or something. So
yeah. See John Rambo.
What is college?
Yeah.
Other than citizenship. Yes, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. College for citizens. So yeah, you see all that at work and then it just makes it more tragic as the movie goes on. It's just like these kids, man, like he,
I don't know what they're
getting
into.
He's gone to Harvard and chilled. He literally says, I don't want to go on vacation. I'm going to the
military. Well, literally when the woman
you're rich. Your family is rich. You do not need to join the military.
They're all
when
like,
the woman
don't.
Says, why are you doing this? I want to have a family, and it's easier to get a license if you have military service.
Right.
And then there's the other guy who says, I'm thinking about I'll probably try to be a politician one day, and this will just look good as a record.
That's
so,
right. Whenever he's discussing in the
that's what's funny is like, and they all have like specific reasons, and he's just like, I just thought it looked cool, and I wanted to like follow my girlfriend into the military. And they're like, what an idiot! Shit. You could have gone to Harvard.
Yes. No brain.
Why did you do this?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah,
the anime is exactly like this. And also, real quick, Mike, what did you think of the bugs look in the anime?
It's a little. I mean, I'm just so attached to the current look, so it was just a little different. It kind of, again, it's giving me. Like, this is early Evangelion Angels. Like
to describe it, Jacob, it's kind of Cronenberg-y. They're like starships that are just a series of eyeballs, basically.
Yeah. They're really like Eldritch.
I was saying like Cronenberg is a...
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Cronenberg is a similar director to Verhoeven, where he's very controversial. Mm-hmm. People either love him or hate him kind of thing.
Right.
Did most of his best work in the 80s and 90s.
Turned down Empire Strikes Back.
Right, jeez, that's another
look at
one.
This.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Man, Star Wars could have had much more
Star
interesting
Wars
directors.
Star Wars could have been very strange.
Wow. Yeah. It could have been
you
many
want
things.
Us, David Lynch, you want us weirdos to direct these movies? Are you sure?
Honestly, yes. Yeah, they should have.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm a quiet little weirdo, too, named George Lucas. Yeah, you guys should make these movies. Okay.
Do my hot rods anyway. Like,
I'm like a Dutch weirdo. You want me to make this movie?
Right.
What if all the Jedi were fucking and having, co-ed showers together?
I'm going literally Jesus Christ come down and, like, bless them. Okay.
Trust me. I got notes on the third movie, but I guess we could kind of roll around some bounce here. But I wanted to mention the co-ed shower scene. There's a famous story I'm sure you guys know where, like, some of the actors were uncomfortable. So he's like, I'll be naked, too. And he just directing the scene completely naked with the actors all naked so that everybody's
dick out
equal.
Paul Verhoeven saying action as you're
it's
just
framed
like
very well
out.
It is
where
it's
like the showers and stuff are like hiding all the bits that you wouldn't want shown.
But the fact that he's like, yeah, I'll do it too. Respect.
People always point this one out. I think people forget just because she's not naked in it. Nancy Allen, who's the co-lead of RoboCop. It is a co-ed locker room in RoboCop, which is in a Detroit dystopian future, which we should point out. So she's putting her uniform on already and walks out. So it's not a...
Paul Verhoeven is just obsessed with the idea of co-ed showers and locker rooms.
Into a hot spring.
It's super progressive. It's gender neutral. Like, he's like, no, there should be no pronoun. There should only be RoboCops.
Yeah, you're all just Marines. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. You're all just
fat, worthless Americans. Injury. Look at you with your disgusting bodies.
He's
got the European sensibilities. This
America.
Boot camp
that's
scene.
What I love the most about it.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing.
I love all the boot camp stuff because it is like Johnny Rico's first experience of like, oh, the military isn't what I was expecting. Like, shit's going bad. There's an incident where one of his, teammates gets killed in a
exercise, live fire
exercise. Hey, take your helmet off. Oh, okay, that's a good idea. Bang. Zim, Clancy Brown rules as the drill instructor that first scene where he's like, who here thinks they could kick my ass? And that guy's like, I think I could. And he's like, fucking try.
He just breaks his arm. I think I broke my arm.
So good. Again, throwing the knife in the hand.
Throwing the knife.
Yep. Why do we have to use knives? Yeah, when with this
can't
nuclear
push the
war.
If they don't have a hand. Yeah.
Tactical mini nuke also. Thanks for introducing that.
A nuke
that.
You throw, Mike. Like, it's a little like a football-sized nuke. Yeah, that you just like, just shoot
up. Yeah, again, to
like,
get into Helldivers.
We're just casually nuking stuff. Yeah, like even that is very funny if you really think about it for a second.
And a big part of Helldivers is calling in stratagems, which are like airstrikes and bombs and all kinds of stuff that you can drop from your ship.
Yeah, that's the adjusted strategy. It's like when they're getting owned, they're like, we'll send planes to drop bombs on them first. And they bring in the stratagems, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
This movie would have as many drones if it was now as Helldivers does.
The guard dog?
Yeah.
So boot camp, he's like, he's ready to drop out because of this incident. Then there's this big attack on Buenos Aires, right? The bugs strike back.
Hey, what's up with the sky up there? The phone call he's having with his parents as they get hit by a meteor, and asteroid destroys Brazil, which is a very thing we should point out. His name is Juan Johnny Rico. His girlfriend's name is
from Buenos Aires. You know, he's very white.
Isabella is the other girl. It's all and they're all white actors from Buenos Aires. Again, this is commentary. It is this colonialism of the future. So,
well, the other thing is too that post World War II, a lot of the Nazi war criminals that escaped went to Brazil to hide.
Come to Brazil, Daddy. Magneto got them all, though, for what it's worth.
Yeah, that's right. Magneto did get them all.
So there's a big disaster. They throw an asteroid at Earth. It hits Brazil, wipes out millions of people. So he's like, he's all ready to drop out. Then he's like, you know what? It's time to bite the bugs.
Yep. And so he joins up. And his parents are so supportive. It makes me sad because they're like, hey, man, I know we didn't want you to go, but we're just hoping you're okay. You know, hey, Johnny, all right. You know, and then it's like, oh,
man. Like, shut up, parents. I'm going to military school.
Right.
Dizzy is not a character in the anime, Jacob. So, like, a whole episode is just his parents slapping him in the face, going, like, we disowned you. Like, they really stretch that part of it out.
Yeah. Huh. But, yeah, I guess, I mean, should I mention some of the sequel stuff?
I want to hear about all the dog guests.
So, in summary, I guess, the second one, completely skippable. It's basically there's some bugs, and then the troops hide in a base the whole movie, and then there's some bug that can infect people, and it becomes a zombie. It becomes a zombie thing. It's stupid. It's like regular human-on-human violence. Like, there's no bugs in it, like, really.
But kind of like a thing, alien, like a space, like, quarantine while a monster attacks story, or no?
They're trying to hold out for Xville. Like, they can't get out of the planet, so they're just hiding in this old bunker, and, like, someone got infected, and it's like,
okay. Now, obviously, huge budget drop. That's the main thing. These become direct to DVD. I would go to Blockbuster. I would rent Starship Trooper. I would look and be like, "What are these?" Like I would be like horrified. I'd be like, "What are these other?" Like, not even a chance I would watch these.
Right
now, Mike.
Yeah.
Obviously, with that money going down, that's going to affect the special effects. But if Phil Tippett's directing it, like, how does everything kind of look?
Well, again, the bugs, they're fine, but they're only really used in, like, the beginning and the end slightly, and it's a lot of, like, blood, like, human murder effects. Like, it's like a normal slasher, almost. Like, it's not like Phil Tippett. I don't know, it's like, it doesn't seem like they leaned into
this. This is what I hear, and maybe you can confirm if this is true, but basically, what I heard about the second and third ones, at least, the second one, they sort of lose all the satire and just play completely straight. Whereas the Ed Niemeyer got directorial control on the third one and returned it to the tone of the first one. And obviously, Casper Van Dien came back and everything. So it's more similar to the first movie. So people say that one's the superior sequel.
So, yeah, what I'm saying is don't watch two ever, but you can watch three because it does get back to the tone of the satire. You learn more about the Federation culture. Wow. There's, do you want to know more? They get back to the vignettes.
Really?
Yeah. It's bad, but it's good.
I might watch that one then.
Yeah. I might watch that one. You get Rico Johnny back. Rico. Well, okay. So, like, eye patch, metal hand. Like, what, is he, like, crippled in any? No, nothing. Nope. Interesting.
See, this is
the eye patch is for the other ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
CG. I think, no offense to any of the sequels, I like to imagine in my head that immediately after the first movie ends, he just dies horribly in the next battle that he's in.
100%.
Because that's obviously what's about to happen.
That's almost what the framing device of the first movie being the first bit of propaganda of showing the newscaster following them to lead up. It's him turning and be like, I say we kill them all. Let's go. Rico's roughnecks. And then him getting stabbed in the leg. Yeah. And that setting up the rest of the movie, the flashback to the Ford. Jacob, it does set up that, like, the next conflict this guy's in, he will die. Like, he is bad. Well, that
cycle of
meat for the meat grinder.
The superior officer who's training him dies, he takes over, he gets promoted to the superior officer, he's gonna die, and then someone's gonna take over him. That's just the cycle of how it works, you know?
Exactly. So you get that. But I agree. Rico dies when he runs out that door. But
this is a dream.
Like, immediately.
yeah. But if I can spoil it, some of it, can I spoil the third movie?
Please.
There's something important that you must know.
Absolutely. Okay.
So well, first of all, we have Jolene Baylock, you know, T'Pol from Star Trek Enterprise. This is after it was canceled, so not going great. But so in this movie, basically the main plot is there's a character that's very religious, right? Like God, Christian religion, right? And so at the end, they're about to get wiped out by bugs, Jolene Baylock and this other lady. And she's like, just pray with me. Come on, just pray. So they're praying. And then the eagle, the airstrike comes in and saves them. And then it's like Jolene Baylock, like, I believe in God now, right? So then at the end of the movie, the Federation propaganda is like, guess what? Like, because everybody's religious now. Religion is back. Like, guess what we found out? God is real and he's on our side. And it's like, we will win. So they co-op the religion for the
propaganda. I'm so glad we talked about fucking Dune 2 last week and that we're continuing on this, like, space maniacs,
space religions.
Yes, I fucking love it, guys. It's so
Vulcan would never believe in God.
Like, yep, God is on our side, and we're gonna win. It's like,
Vulcan would never believe in God. It is not logical. Yes. Right.
So the third one's worth watching if you want more of that propaganda.
And you said so power armors, are they putting on mech battle suits?
They get
in
a marauder suit in the third one. Yeah, they get some mechs finally.
That's cool.
Which will be a Helldivers thing, too.
That's cool.
There's a couple of Japanese CG ones that aren't good, just briefly.
Yes, I've seen definitely one of those on Netflix where I was, like, cooking and, like, put that on came back out and was like, oh, there's those aliens I like.
They take it very seriously, bug fight.
I saw one that was, like, Casper Van Dien and Dina Meyer voices return in this movie. So,
wow.
Some of them are voiced by some of the main cast members.
Yeah, that's fucking just Final Fantasy, the spirit Star Trek shit within. Yeah.
They're lower quality than the Resident Evil direct to DVDs. And that's
For sure.
So don't watch those, but it is the same characters. It's Rico and Carmen. It's like Carl. It's like, okay, guys.
Denise Richards, I don't think she ever came back because she was just became too big of a star.
I wouldn't want her to come back. My favorite character is Jake Busey, because of course at the
Ace,
is that his name?
Ace,
when they're at the training, when basically he like pushes Casper Van Dien over and Casper Van Dien pushes him back, he's like, I like that you don't take my shit, we should be best friends, and they're like, okay.
And Casper Van Dien's like, I'm accepted. Like, he's so happy that he made a friend.
He's just like, writes home. He's like, I'm making friends here, Carmen. And then she breaks up with him by mailing him a CD-ROM mic.
And I like how they're all watching his, like, video.
Oh, you blew it, bro.
They're like, she's like, let's be friends. And obviously he has that rival that he plays against in football that goes to pilot
baseball
school with her.
Yeah.
Baseball.
Right.
Which
again, also.
Well, we didn't even talk about. There's a lot of we didn't talk about in this movie, but like the cut-ins with the vignettes of the different news things. The one where they capture a criminal who's being tried for murder and then executed the same day is just very funny.
No, in the third movie, they call back to like, we got the hangings at 6 o'clock. We got to watch it on the TV. Like they bring that back up.
Like,
so many hangings and lashings. I mean, our lead hero gets lashed.
That's right.
It's horrible.
His punishment in boot camp is to be tied to a post and get 10 lashes.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty brutal. Like it's big cuts. Like the effects are like, this is horrible. Like peeling off the veneer of the,
it's like a laser whip too. It's awesome.
Crazy. Yeah.
And the whole energy of it is like, everyone fights. No one quits. If you try to run away, I'll kill you myself. Basically is what the superior officer says. So it's like very much like, oh, you're going to die for the Federation.
Is that thing that like that Marine code that like Zack Snyder like says to his crews that like advance with me. If I fall behind, leave me. If I try to run, kill me. Like he says that like, I think he like thinks Starship Troopers is real.
Like 300.
That's exactly why
it's like,
Rebel Moon
we have
the way
cracked
it
is. Him. Yes, it is. We should have done Rebel Moon Dune to this to really be like, okay, we've figured it out. Space Messiah fascism.
Yeah.
By the way, I have to mention,
go ahead.
Since we're talking Rebel Moon, he recently did say in an interview that he believes more people watch Rebel Moon on Netflix than watch Barbie. Because if you look at the numbers,
he's been saying some crazy. He said Batman must kill, stop being cowards.
Yeah, we said if you're limiting your superheroes like that, you're not going to get interesting stories. So he's trying to deconstruct the superhero.
God.
Yeah, he compared the black and white Justice League. He's like, there's a shot with Alfred and Batman. And it's in silhouettes in black and white. You know, it's like we were calling it Citizen Wayne, you know, like Citizen Kane, because they're both black and white. I'm like, oh, my God.
Sure, man.
Like, I'm crying.
Equal quality works. Equal quality
the
works.
Way that he... The way that he arrived at this conclusion that more people have seen Rebel Moon than Barbie, which is obviously not true.
well,
is that if you look at Netflix's numbers,
I believe more Netflix, dogs have.
Yeah.
And Netflix, man. He kind of revealed this, that Netflix assumes every view is two people watching because it's like they assume everyone is watching with their significant other or whoever you know, that lives with them.
Yeah.
Which I would say you're really overestimating the average Zack Snyder fan if you think they all have significant others.
That's funny.
But yeah, so he's saying if you multiply the views by two, it's more so people than watch Barbie, which I still don't buy that. But okay,
yeah,
Zach.
No. But yeah, the way he does not understand metaphor and satire, and you know, that's where now we have the Paul Verhoeven doing it the right way in the Starship Troopers. So
I'll say in another way some very positive satire, because let's jump over real quick, let's start talking the video game now. Let's talk a little Helldivers 2 here on Normies Like Us. We're back here on Normies Like Us, where we are talking a little bit of space bugs. Right now, we're going to pivot from Starship Troopers, and we're going to talk a little Helldivers 2, the video game phenomenon.
For democracy.
For liberty.
Now, this is the thing that I think Helldivers does add to the Starship Troopers formula by adding this layer of democracy and freedom. You know, we're spreading freedom across the galaxy.
Yes.
Angle, and I think that's a very post War on Terror 2000s thing that Starship Trooper doesn't necessarily have, because it was 90s, which I think is very interesting.
The post 9/11, spreading democracy, right?
freedom fries. Yeah. We don't call them French fries anymore; we call them freedom fries.
We did that, So Helldivers is basically you're fighting giant bugs. There's also robots, you know, and it's what if you bought into the propaganda? Like, what if your player character is all about the Federation?
You're Johnny Rico.
You're Johnny Rico, and you're 100% bought in. And
you're fighting,
funny.
Super Earth is what Earth is called now, I guess.
Super.
I don't know if it's a different
Super
planet.
Earth.
Yeah. But they're fighting a war on two fronts. So they have the Terminids, the bugs, on one side of the galaxy, and then they have the automatons on the other side of the galaxy. And these are very Terminator inspired. I mean, they have the basic ones look like T-1000s essentially, and they have different boss type ones and everything. But I do like it because it varies up the gameplay. So you can do the bugs, which are more melee based normally, whereas the robots are more they'll shoot at you from farther away and stuff. So different kind of gameplay, which I really like. Yeah,
for each faction. But the flavor of it is just like, as if, do you want to know more? Like that, the propaganda machine of Starship Troopers, like that's the flavor of the in-universe, because they are just yelling, you know, for democracy. And it's like, these bugs don't vote. Like, what do you mean?
We're spreading democracy. Yeah.
Now, bugs are communists. I watched this on Twitch and YouTube. As I said, I watch people play it. I've said in the past, my video game consumption usually involves the old mute button. Yep. Five other things going on. Turn the TV on. Now, here's what I discovered as I turned my speaker up on this. It is when this video game cracked for me, when I could hear all that great lore audio stuff kicking in of democracy and, you know, just sort of like all the chants and sort of great new world stuff. Yes.
Sweet,
I thought that was so
cool.
My
life for Super Earth.
Yeah, there's all these recorded phrases that your troops will yell out at different times. You'll order an airstrike and they'll say democracy inbound and, like, you know, napalm strike. It's so great. But you have to get that it's a bit, you know, and some people weren't getting that it's a bit with Starship Troopers. But that's what's so funny. It's like, the internet has really leaned into it, like the Super Earth thing. And there's like news reports on TikTok of like, we're losing ground on Malevian Creek, Robot Vietnam. Like, we need you in there, you know?
I think some people still don't get it that play this game, because they're just like, shoot bugs is cool.
That's Zack Snyder fans.
Yeah, but you can still think it's cool and also get the subtext to it.
We like and the satire.
I think there's three levels. I think there's truly the people who play it and get it, the people who play it and don't get it. And then I think there are the people who just look at the TikTok memification of like, oh, we're all making these big jokes about like democracy and, you know, like we're all fascists. I'll play it and just do that. But again, don't get it.
No. And I think like the attitude of people now, like we've lived through some shit, at least our generation. And we're kind of, we get that, like the idea of American democracy, like it's kind of like, we'll overthrow a government here or there, you know? So it's like, yeah, we're kind of bought in on the democracy bit. Like it's, we get it. It's kind of funny, but sad, but funny, you know?
Well, because when we were coming of age, you know, the whole war on terror thing happened. And let's just say our government started some wars that maybe they shouldn't have started or did, or under false pretenses. Right. And a lot of people got jaded from that. And a lot of people that went into the military and were sent to Iraq and Afghanistan were jaded by their experience there. So I think our generation's really kind of been through it in regards to that.
And then the patriotism that was happening, like all the USA flag, you know what I mean? It was turned into high gear. The bald eagles, man, they were all over. So that's one thing I think Paul Verhoeven could have done with his movie is like, if it would have been a false flag attack from the bugs, like that's the one thing that would have been like, oh shit. Like,
well, that's the, I mean, the subtext of that movie, right, is that essentially the Federation attacked the bugs first, then the bugs were just retaliating in self-defense. And that's when we kicked it into overdrive and started a whole war.
Right, exactly. And that's similar to, I mean, people have posited, I'm a citizen, I'm a patriot, okay? I don't believe in these things, but there's some people who say that maybe Super Earth incurred on the bugs, which is lies, obviously.
Now, Jacob shared a great TikTok that gave some of this information. But am I correct in saying, guys, that does it also kind of take a Dark Souls-style attempt with this lore where you really kind of have to actively dig in, click on stuff, and sort of view the things that are happening in the background, too, to get this stuff?
At times, yeah, it can. I mean, a lot of it's just sort of baked into the lore. But like, so one of the optional objectives you have sometimes is to destroy an illegal broadcast. And you realize that if you look at what they're broadcasting before you destroy it, it's like, you know, the bug attacks are like a false flag attack and this kind of stuff. So it's humans that are saying, we don't believe what the Ministry of Truth is telling us. And then you have to destroy it. It's an illegal broadcast.
Because you're just on working for the government. But
as soldiers of the Ministry of Truth.
Yeah. And I guess that we have to highlight, too, it's multiplayer, four-player, and the thing is, like, there's, like, 500,000 people playing it, but we're all working for the same objective. So, like, you have 200,000 people on one planet trying to liberate it, you know, and if everybody works together, you know, you're...
Oh, really?
And when you go to a planet, you can look out the windows of your ship, and you can see all the other ships, and you can see stratagems being called down on the planet's surface and stuff.
And you interact? And you
you're always in a four-man fire team, but if they win, it progresses the objective for the global state.
Yeah, so there's an overall percentage of how liberated is this planet. And when you complete a mission, it goes like ticks like 0.00010%. You're like, I contributed.
Yeah. So everybody can free planets. There's like a DM named Joel, we found out. He's in charge of the events in the world. So like he'll be like, oh, there's an attack coming this week. You got to defend this planet. So he's like live DMing this thing that everybody's playing.
Wow.
So this is a genius way, I think, to do like a live service game model. Because there's been a lot. Live service is the big thing now. Like with Fortnite, where you release new content
Suicide
every
Squad
season.
Is dead.
Yes. And I said before, the problem with live service games is the gaming ecosystem can only support like six or seven of those at a time because they require a constant user base. Helldivers has had a consistent user base since it came out. Like people are still playing
growing
it as much as they did on launch, which is crazy.
Wow. And
the reason for that is because this live service model with this DM, and so they just added mechs, right? And for the mech thing, they had this big event where they're like, you know, the automatons are attacking this planet that has all the mech factories on it. We need to liberate this planet in order to get the mechs because we can't get the mechs until we liberate this planet. So it was this big, you know, worldwide galactic push on this one planet.
Dive.
Everybody online is like, go to Tien Quan. We're going to get the mechs. We got to liberate the factories. And everybody like work together.
Do your part. Don't you want the mechs? Do your part.
I did my exactly. It's right. Brilliant.
It is so.
And we did instead it. Of just putting it in the time store. Limit, then you get the mechs as a reward.
Yeah. So now everybody has mechs.
And the way the DM basically works is he can like add. He can decide which planets are, you know, need to be liberated, because the way the map works, there's all these planets and only a couple of them are active at a time, basically. And so they can rotate through, and all the planets are different procedurally generated, but they're all unique. So you have different unique ecosystems. You have like jungle planets, desert planets, all kinds
of things. I wanted to ask about that. Yeah. Every video I watched today, we're all on this gray, ashy planet with sort of red foliage. So I did want to ask you guys if the locales change. So that's good to know.
It's okay. Surprisingly varied from planet to planet, and it all looks really good. Like especially this game was $40 and it looks incredible. If you have,
it looks like Fortnite rig. Meets Halo. We should point out, it has a very cool environments. Aesthetic.
Yeah. The environments are super detailed. And the missions are super varied that you're doing. Like you're doing all kinds of different missions and they vary them up so that you don't get bored doing the same thing over and over kind of thing. There's always something new to do. There's different sub objectives. You can collect samples along the way. So each gaming experience is different and is cinematic in its own way. It just keeps it super fresh. And that's why it's so addicting, I think.
Yeah, because there's like several objective types, like launching a nuke or getting some codes off a laptop, whatever. And you have a couple objectives every time you drop on a planet. And then as you're doing those, just what do they call it? Like emergent gaming is
emerging
happening.
Gameplay.
Like playing with your friends, like just these moments of barely getting off the planet when there's like a million monsters coming at the last second, and like
it's all
creating these stories with your friends every time. It's great.
Yeah, it's unique to your playthrough, but it's all super cinematic because you're like, you're always at the point of like, oh, we're not gonna make it, we're just barely making it. And then when you make it, it feels so good. You're like, we got out of there, we got the samples. Fucking did everything. Like
you feel like you're in an action movie. It's an amazing feeling game. And then there's interesting meta with it too, because there's like a hug emote. So the amount of hugging and that is happening in this game, there's so much positive hugs happening. Like we love
one rule for our squad. Hugs are mandatory.
All my friends are always talking about democracy and hugging each other.
You know, we like to hug. What if we hugged when the nuke goes off? Like if I play with randoms and like we win, I'll just stand in their spaceship with my arms out and then they'll bring me in. I can't talk to them, but everybody loves a hug.
It's great.
You there's guys a gameplay.
Oh, I just want to say final hug note and then I'll see the floor. you can call in a stratagem, right? And it'll kill you, but you have a personal shield, right? So your shield will protect you from like a bomb landing on your head. So you could call a bomb on your head. And if you have a shield and then you tell your bro to hug you, you'll both survive because he's under your shield.
You can hug
you can hug him as a bomb drops on top of both of you and you'll protect your guy. It's great.
And also what I want to say about the objectives too, the different missions, like I said, they're super varied and there's a lot more to it than just go here, push a button. You have to like get on a terminal, you have to log into a terminal, you have to do something, you have to do different like mini game puzzles within the terminal to do something else.
Oh, that's awesome. I love games.
So you get on the computer, you open the valve, are you ready to pull the fucking things? Oh shit, we got bugs incoming. It's like, it's awesome.
All while you're facing off waves against bugs, and then you've got to like to do stratagems and to do the terminals. A lot of times you have to use like arrow keys or your D-pad on your controller where you're punching in different codes. So you got to get the code right. If you mess it up, you got to start over.
Yeah. Did you see that, Colin?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
It's for the stratagems too. String. So to drop a bomb, you got to punch in this string of arrow numbers. And then hopefully you get it right while you're running away from a million different bugs and things shooting at you. It's just super fun. Yeah.
But you could do macros for the stratagems. Like you could make it one button, but that would like, I would never, because the fun is trying to get the sequence right. Yeah.
Yeah. That takes away from the spirit of the game by doing that. They purposely made those things like that. Mm-hmm. So it would, you know, that's what they want you to do in the gameplay.
Yeah. But I guess to Starship Troopers, it is you're just meat for the meat grinder, and like you create your first character and like, oh, pick your voice and whatever, and then that character dies and there's just a new character. Like it's not even the same voice. It's they're implying that Helldiver's dead. It's just next.
And the tutorial the tutorial that you do it when you first start the game is very like propagandized, like Starship Troopers 2, where it's all talking about, it's like basically you're going through the boot camp in Starship Troopers and then you die at the end of it, and that's how you learn how to play the game.
Yeah, but so they're definitely implying, like, they keep track of the number of hell divers that you've lost. So it's like literally every time you die, they're bringing in another person from the super Earth to fill that spot. So you're just
feeding the machine. Guy's son.
Good. Yeah,
and then even like the flavor text on like loading screens and stuff is all like. Like, there's one that's like, do not try diplomacy. The best diplomacy is just shooting the enemy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
oh, then even God.
In the game store, right? When you can buy certain cosmetic, you know, uniforms and helmets and stuff. And then the reviews for the things are all, they're not real reviews, but they're all 5-star reviews approved by the Ministry of Truth. And they're all like, this is amazing stuff. And there's like 1 1-star review and it says, and being investigated under investigation for treason by the Ministry of Truth.
It's all over it.
That scene in Starship Troopers where they're in school early on and Dina Meyers says, well, my mom said, you know, violence never solved anything. And he's like, what do you know? Conflict is the only thing that's ever solved anything. And he like blows up her. Now, here's what I want to ask you guys. You're playing this in squads with other people. It's 4 players, right?
Yep.
Yes. Now, is it Apex Legends roles and skills based that you're getting assigned on different roles, or is it just the equipment that you're picking up is now you're the sniper Jacob, you're the shotgun
essentially
guy because of what you've got?
You all start the same. You're just a normal guy or girl. You're a normal person. You pick the guns you're bringing in to the mission and the stratagems. You can pick like 4 different stratagems, and these are all
earn
the different
the cape, or you drop down with a cape.
You start with a basic cape, but you can get different cosmetic get capes ones. And stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Essentially, Helldivers is just Starship Troopers with capes.
which if you think you're going to create like a
pretty good.
Like a galactic army that people want to join, give them a cape. Like capes are cool. People want those. It's pretty sick.
And the different
Rebel
the different
had capes. Maybe Zach got that right.
Yeah, right.
And so there's 3 parts of your armor. There's the armor, the helmet, and the cape. And only the armor has special stats to it. So you're free to change out your helmet and your cape just for aesthetic purposes, which I like. The one minor nitpick I would say about the customization is just that I wish there were more color customization. Like I wish you could take the armors that you have and change the colorway on them.
They'll make you guys pay for that in a month
they
from
won't.
Now though.
Maybe.
Really?
Yeah. They're nice. These are good live service boys. You can unlock everything with in-game currency. The stuff that you can buy if you like premium, it's not like any better. Like stat wise.
Yeah, it's not pay to win, which is how all microtransactions should be, in my opinion. Not pay to win. It's all just aesthetic, which I
so far they haven't been predatory, I guess. They gave us mechs.
Yeah,
you can unlock
in-game currency in the battle pass. So you can essentially save up enough that you can buy whatever cosmetic you want without ever spending money on the game. Or you can spend money and get everything if you want to do that too.
But they got to do some real crossovers. They got to do a fucking actual Starship Trooper skins. That would be fucking
right.
Dope. Well, that's what we're thinking. You know, they got, I can't remember who, I think they're with PlayStation. They're not on Xbox, which everyone's saying, we need those Halo players to help us win the war. You know, get this thing on Xbox because it's PC and PlayStation.
It's on PlayStation.
But, like, you can
PC.
Have like a Destiny crossover or something, you know?
It looks like Destiny, dude. Absolutely.
It does look a lot like Destiny. I'm on the team of, I don't want other licensed IP crossover because I just want everything to stay within this world aesthetically and everything. Like, it's not Fortnite, you know, like I like Fortnite for what Fortnite is, but I think it wouldn't ruin the game for me, but it'd be slightly immersion breaking if there was like other licensed.
The
IP
lore is too cool for Helldivers to muck.
Yeah.
It up.
But they can do plenty of I'm sure they'll add a lot of cosmetics over time to keep people interested that can all fit within the world building of the game.
Yeah. And I guess, so this team, you know, they didn't expect this to be as successful as it was. Like, it launched and the servers were crashing because there was too many people playing it. And they had to quickly
had a lot of
get
problems
new servers.
On launch.
There was a lot of issues because it was too popular. So they're now changing their roadmap and everything. Like, they're adjusting to the popularity. So they're going to put more people on making cosmetics. They didn't know. They didn't know they would need all this shit. So the fact that we gave them extra for getting vehicles, they're putting in the resources to supply the community that's kind of grown out of this because we love Super Earth and freedom.
To me,
that's so cool.
This is what another game that Mike and I played a lot back in the day. This is what it should have been. Alien Fireteam Elite.
Yes.
Which has very similar game mechanics where it's a squad-based horde shooter.
Small studio.
Yeah, and that game was pretty limited, and I think the user base didn't last long, so they didn't release a lot of... They had a DLC and stuff, but they didn't sure. have a long lifespan on that game because mm-hmm. it didn't have a huge player base after the first couple months. This game definitely seems like it has more staying power, and it was such a surprise hit. It kind of came out mm-hmm. of nowhere. All of a sudden, everyone was playing it. The word of mouth was so good that people were like, you got to try this game out, and then people were playing together and stuff. And I've played this game, I mean, not since, you know, Halo Infinite first came out when we were playing with a bunch of different people on Discord and stuff, but I've played this game with so many people online, friends of friends and stuff. You can just squad up, and mm-hmm. it's genius in that you can just drop into a mission in the middle of the mission. So say two of your friends started a mission, you're like 15 minutes late. You can join their party and drop in mid-mission.
That's what Fortnite has been fucking missing forever, dude.
Oh. It's sick. Oh, also,
so just
Colin,
the ease of it all. Yeah.
When you drop in, you can land on bugs and shit to kill them. So like when you die, I'm like, throw me at the big bug. Throw me at the big one. And like I try to land on shit.
You can also drop on your teammates too.
Talk about the friendly fire of it all real quick. Because when you call in the big hits, I've seen so many memes of people being like, get out of that zone. I fucking flamed that place. What are you doing? This,
to me, just adds more fun to the game. Friendly fire is always on. There's no way to turn it off because it's part of the game.
It's war.
You're so expendable. Yeah, you're so expendable as a Marine that you could just die in a friendly fire incident, and you know that shit happens. So you can land on your friends.
Supplies. Yep.
Yeah. You can accidentally blow your friends up. You can shoot your friends. Yeah.
You can you order in your everything comes from the sky. Like you get a gun and they drop it. Like I've accidentally stood under it and like my own gun supply drop lands on my head and kills me because I wasn't paying attention.
You can get killed by the dropship at the end of the mission. If you're standing on the landing platform, it'll kill you when it lands.
Wow.
It's hilarious.
So it's pretty great. The friendly fire.
There's a lot of ways to die.
The chaos.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I just threw an airstrike over there. Watch out. And you got to run.
See,
it's like, danger
this
close.
This is
danger
what
close.
That fucking Suicide Squad game should have been. If they're going to make it weird live service, you should have been just like a fucking blood sponge like this game. Just
and I
like ready to die.
Like, that's the lesson that I think people need to learn here. This is a live service game that has the core gameplay is just fun. It encourages play with friends and it's unique in that way, but they're not being predatory. Like there is content. The core of it is so good that we'll wait for a vehicle. We'll wait for more stuff. Cause the rest
and again,
of
this is a $40 game. So it's not even a full $60, $70
game. They
charge
$60 for just kill a Suicide Squad. Kill me for buying.
Yeah. It reminds me of the fucking imposter game. What was that one called?
Among Us.
Or the Among Us. Thank you, Among Us. And the fucking that fucking multiplayer game where people run. What was that thing called?
Fall Guys.
Thank you. Yeah. Where two of these things where they just came out of nowhere. Yeah. Super unique gameplay where people were like, oh, should we just steal everything about that immediately?
Right. Yeah. A couple of things I want to say too.
Go for it.
Yeah.
I like about this game, so one thing is it is definitely a game that's meant to be played co-op. You can play it solo, but it's much harder. And I've played solo. It's impossible to play above level 4, which is the medium difficulty for me anyway. You can play with randos, which I don't like to do because I'm shy.
Right.
But
you're not hugging randos?
No. I don't use voice comms, but I do hug in randos sometimes.
Yeah, give them hugs.
I'm just afraid of letting them down by being on their team. But yeah, it's definitely a game meant for co-op, and it's built around that, which I like. And the other thing about it, compared to some of these other live service shooter type games, even like Destiny or Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League and all that, the way information is presented to you. So a lot of these shooter games, you'll get all these numbers all over the screen. And when you shoot people, you see how much damage you're doing from the numbers. This game, there's no numbers like that or anything. You're just shooting the bugs and you see how much you're damaging them because you'll see the damage on them because they get fucking destroyed when you shoot them.
Off. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and so you have chargers that have this thick armor on. You can shoot them from behind to try to kill them, or you can try to blow their armor off with certain weapons that are armor penetrating, and you see the damage that you're doing, and that's how you can tell how close it is to death. There's no numbers to indicate that.
You can shoot all limbs and stuff if you want to slow them down. Like you can shoot the arms off the robots and they have no gun and they just try to walk at you.
It's like
you just troll them.
Starship Troopers in the NPH scene when he's talking about oh, you can shoot off the limb and it's still at 86%, mm-hmm. you know, capability where you can shoot his brain stem and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll so still cripple like with 2-3 legs. Yeah.
It's right. Wild. And each kind of, you know, bug and robot has its own weak points that you have to find. Some you have to like get around from and shoot them from behind because they have very strong armor in front of them and stuff. So it's just all the way information is presented to you. It's just all, you know, very good. And this, it doesn't clutter up your screen with a bunch of nonsense. There's not like all the, like there's some information like in your HUD, but it's all useful information. It's not so over cluttering like your HUD. HUD.
Like where yeah. you're going and what you're
even
doing,
the map, right? You have to call up the map separately. And when you do that, your player is like looking at their arms. So you can't shoot vulnerable. At the same time. It's all very realistic. And there's certain missions where you have to carry like a USB drive, a hard drive. And when you carry the hard drive, it's like a big thing. So you can't use your primary gun. You can only use your secondary weapon. So
you got to have your teammates kind of cover you because you just got a pistol. You got to run this thing across the map, that kind of thing.
I love it.
And some of these missions are so cool. Like go to a terminal, do like a 5-step process, turn on the oil valves or whatever. Like the amount of detail, it's just, it's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess to bring us, I think we'll start rounding the corner to final thoughts here, but the Starship Troopers angle, like it's so great. And I think that honestly, this is like the best sequel, even though it's not a sequel to Starship Troopers. Like it feeds that desire to have that satire, that energy, you know?
And there's been Starship Troopers licensed games before, but
I think this
is absolutely a sequel to Starship Troopers for sure.
Even when it came out, I told you guys, I want to watch Starship Troopers. We waited a couple weeks. We had other programs.
Yeah, but
playing this made me immediately want to rewatch it. So they're a great pair.
In this game, it takes inspiration from a lot of sources. Like I mentioned, Terminator, Starship Troopers, even the dropship at the end of the mission is called the Pelican. And it looks exactly like the Pelican from Halo.
No, These are the ODST
troopers, right?
Yeah.
Well, they do. Yeah, they are.
Which,
as helmets.
But sort of a mishmash of all these sci-fi properties that people already like.
It's like Power World.
They took all these different concepts that people liked and put it together and made something original. And I think like Power World, that's why it's been successful. I stopped playing Power World, unfortunately, because I just didn't have enough time to play a million different games and play this. But there is still an audience for Power World that are still playing it. And that's another game that's meant to be played co-op. So these games, I don't know, they just kind of come out of nowhere and people are loving them more than AAA games. It's an interesting time in the game ecosystem.
Yeah. And I kind of want to touch on that a little bit more on final thoughts too. As we wrap up the old Starship Troopers and Helldivers. Let's get to the Xville boys. Pelican incoming.
It's a good day to die. When you know the reasons why, citizens, we fight for what is right. A noble sacrifice. When duty calls, you pay the price. For the Federation, I will give my life.
We're back here on Armies Like Us. We're about to leave the planet. We're heading off Klandathu. We're heading back to Super Earth. We don't care that Buenos Aires isn't a part of it anymore. That's okay.
No.
That's right.
In the Helldivers, they have a bug planet deep in the bug territory that's called Klandath 2.
And should we also point out in that lore video thing Jacob sent, the mineral you're looking for is 017 or no?
Yeah,
it's
710.
Oil upside down.
Turn
that's
it upside down,
it
it's oil.
That's what it is. Yes, right. That's so cool.
Well, very subtle political satire.
Klandath 2.
Yeah, so they include
you're
that
getting
planet.
Fucking sued, Helldivers.
Well,
two
words.
Power of the
Power, my man.
Yeah. And even the armor, like it's a mix between Halo armor, Destiny. Some of the helmets look like Mandalorian helmets. Like they're all like look very similar to other things that you might know.
There's a Kylo Ren helmet, vaguely.
Yeah. Doom helmet. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, you know, we love it. Yeah, the gaming state, I want to touch on that really quick. A $40 game, right? 270,000 people playing it right now at this moment of recording. And the lesson of don't fuck people over because everybody wants to make a live service. Justice League failed, right? It's like, if you just make a good game, people will play it. But then we have Warner Brothers doubling down where they're like, oh, Justice League failed. I want to only do live service. That's what they're head of their gaming department. They're like doubling down on live service because they just want the fat money. But like Jacob said, you can only sustain a couple of those, and Helldivers is eating right now, and I assume it will for a long time.
And Helldivers is a game that values your time because they know that missions can take like upwards of 40 minutes. So every time you play, like, you're having fun. It doesn't feel like a grind. It feels like something you want to do. And you're not, and even the battle pass, like, you're not just grinding, doing random chores like in Fortnite or something. You're getting medals for completing missions, and then those go into the battle pass, and it's all a cycle. So you just keep wanting to do missions. So it's really a game that values your time, and not every live service game does that. Mm-hmm. And it's killing these other AAA games. Like, there's this, I think it's called Skull and Bones, the new Activision pirate game that just came out. Where they said in an interview, like, it's the world's first quadruple A game. That's how big it's going to be.
They had Michelle Rodriguez. Yeah. Someone paid her to.
Right.
Oh, I didn't see any of this. And then people are saying this
game, like, it's going to die immediately because, first of all, we already had a pirate game that people liked called
Sea of Thieves
that people were already playing. And this game costs like $70, and there's microtransactions, and it has all the Activision stuff that people are tired of, like building and crafting and all this different stuff.
Collectathon on the map, all that kind of shit.
And it has stuff that Sea of Thieves, it doesn't have stuff that Sea of Thieves has for much cheaper, where when you can pilot your boat around, but you can't like walk around on the deck of your boat. You can't sword fight on your boat. You can just, when you go to a dock, you just kind of transport immediately onto the dock. So it's just like, this like game Starfield, is gonna fail. Like,
what are you guys doing? Right. And then they're firing everybody, you know, even though they're making, so video game industry is bad, but I think the Helldiver company, they're doing good, so we should support them.
Yeah.
And it's just funny that a game about, you know, super democracy, like extreme super Earth, right? That the companies that are actually super capitalism are fucking up, and then this game is doing well.
But it really just shows you can't, like, there is just no meta. Like, there's no, like, if you make games that are, like, about this content, like, you kind of just have to roll the dice. And if, like, you really, like, true and weird to your thing, people will be like,
this game is, like, the convergence of multiple things, which is super rare, that it's a super fun, addicting game loop. And it's a good company that respects your money and your time. And even, like, the CEO of this company on Twitter and stuff has been super down to earth about everything, even when they were having problems on their server on launch because they had way more people playing than they expected. The CEO of the company was telling people, maybe don't buy this game right away because we're still working on some issues. So the fact that the CEO was telling you not to buy the game, I mean, you know, these big game companies, they would never do that, you know?
And they just chase the trend. Like, so they see live service, they see big pay possibility, and they don't, like, they just chase shit, where these guys seem to have a passion for, like, even though they're inspired by all this stuff, like, they seem to clearly care about what they're making, and they made something even though it's inspired, it's very unique, it feels like nothing I've ever played before. And stop it, the other companies.
And the other big discourse around this game right now is that the balancing, right, because they released a balancing patch that nerfed some of the people's favorite weapons, kind of what became the meta loadout, which are certain guns and stuff that are kind of stronger than a lot of the other guns. So they released a balancing where they nerfed some of those guns, buffed some of the strong, some of the weaker guns and stuff. And some of the fan base was like, this sucks. We hate this. Like, why'd you nerf these blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. They're like, look, we're trying to make multiple play styles viable. Like, it's
right.
It's not about having the most meta build. It's not a PvP game. You're not competing against other people. It's PvE. Like, you don't need to always have the most efficient, most powerful build. That's not that
just
fun.
Just have fun.
I want to drop my home on my friends, damn it.
So there's a sort of a schism in the community right now of people saying, like, they never should have nerfed the fucking railgun and stuff like that. And then other people say, you know, dropping bombs on bugs is fun, so we don't care.
Yeah, we don't care.
It's interesting. And then the other new thing is that they just released the mechs, like we were saying. So, Mike, you're saying, yes, we helped. We did our part.
We did it. I'm doing my part.
Mike, you've been kind of busy the last couple of nights, so you haven't been able to get on. But I've been playing with Adam, friend of the pod, our buddy. We've been doing missions. We dropped the mechs in. It's awesome. You can ride around in the mech. It's like you can, it's like basically having a movable turret now.
Which, back to Starship Troopers, like, they did not, the 80s show had the mechs, right? the first movie didn't, but then the third movie, Casper Van Dien returns, and we get the Marauder mech. It's like these guys hadn't at least watched all three bad Starship Troopers to be like, we need mechs in ours too, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I also, I'm trying to see similarities in the weapon design. Like, I'm looking at Starship Troopers.
Oh,
I'm like,
definitely.
Did they borrow any? You know, just out of curiosity, but a Mashima or whatever that rifle's called.
It's called the mechs in the game are called the Patriot Exosuit, I think. And you drop it in, and for a minute I was like, is this going to be OP now? Like, it's going to make the level so much easier having a mech. But first of all, you have limited ammo. Once you run out of ammo, the mech is useless, basically. And the other thing is the mech can be blown up by different things. So if you can blow up your mech and just kill yourself, basically, you can shoot a missile. And if you shoot it like too close to yourself, you'll just blow up your whole mech, which is fun. So it's got, you know, it's got checks and balances, so it's not too OP, but it can be very helpful at times.
Good physical comedy in this game. That's what
Absolutely.
Oh, and the ragdoll physics are really great too. You'll fly.
Yeah. Sometimes you just get ragdolled across the map. They have a dive animation, which adds a lot of fun.
A hell dive animation?
Yeah.
Well, you can shoot from prone, like crawling on your back, squirming like away. Like, you can shoot from every
posture. Run away, posture. Dive onto the ground, turn around while you're lying down, shoot the birds.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
It's great. Yeah. It's great stuff.
All right.
Anything for the Super Earth?
Here's my final two thoughts. One about Starship Troopers and then one about this game. Starship Troopers, I guess I wish I knew how Robert Heinlein feels about war. Because he invented the ultimate thing that shows, like, the absurdity of it, that, like, it is just about killing so many people, like, the meat in the meat grinder. Like, it's so fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
Right. And if he's a guy who survived that, do you hate it? Like, are you against it? I think you should be.
Or was his pitch, like, again, you were not patriotic enough. Like, you didn't want it.
Yeah.
You didn't want to win bad enough. And is that why the book is very pro-militaristic?
We could have fixed it. We could have fucking got out of it.
We could have won, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the book is that, it does completely play it straight. And it has an intentional glorification of militarism and nationalism, where they're basically saying, we need to, like, double down and just send all our troops and just bomb our enemies until they don't exist anymore. Yeah,
which is horrifying. Why the game is landing, because we've been through, like, weird real life existence. So I think people are like, again, the bit, like, we're here for the bit of, like, hell yeah, democracy, bugs, we started this, but whatever. Like, we can enjoy getting that kind of out of our system.
And there's some backlash from some people where they're like, oh, these nerds are so annoying by coming in and saying, oh, it's satire and all that. We just want to have fun. But I would say you can still have fun playing the game while also realizing the satire and the subtext of it all. Like, it's still fun playing into the bit. Like,
when you do your character select screen, is it co-ed showers? When
they need a co-ed shower.
And so here's my final closer on the video game. The idea that a game master exists for this sort of overarching narrative for a video game experience. Yeah. That is the coolest thing I have ever heard of in my life.
The fact that no one thought about this before, like,
I deserve it.
You deserve it.
Deserve these jobs.
No, people will be like, I don't know what I did to Joel. Why is he, like, they'll get, like, killed by enemies. Like, Joel, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. You know, like, they're acting like
here's the thing. Like, obviously someone creative is like, I have the idea for the next season of Fortnite. It's Olympian gods.
Right.
But I don't think you're like that guy's not, like, telling a story, I don't think.
Just
right?
Real
like
time.
That that's like most likely a team of people working at Epic Games on the new seasons and stuff. But having one guy saying, like, oh, this planet, people are getting missions done too easily on this planet. We need to send in more waves of enemies to buff this planet, essentially. Mm-hmm. And things like that. We're deciding, oh, this planet is getting overrun. Like, we need to give him more stratagems or something. Yeah.
I love it.
He's DMing a game for 400,000 people. It's incredible. Yeah.
Is he a mentac, do you guys think?
He might be a mentac, yeah.
Human.
But I love the all the new content, like, the content drops, being a part of the war effort is just such a good idea to me.
It's
like,
so clever.
This can go on for so long and still remain popular. Yeah.
And if the community didn't get on board to free the mechs, we wouldn't have them. Like, they would withhold right. them until we free that planet. They want,
that was the reward for getting that order done.
That's
in a certain time limit.
Guys. Yep.
Yeah. And we didn't follow the orders early on.
I
am feeling the
FOMO now where I'm like, I didn't help you guys do that. Like, that makes me feel
you're not
insane
doing your part.
Right now. Yes,
I feel bad that I'm not helping the space
service
war.
Guaranteed
I need to be Rico.
God, and I do want to have a baby call one day.
It yeah. is the Starship Trooper attitude. Oh, my God. Like, earn your cape.
That's
but,
so
yeah,
crazy.
I'll be playing with my friends and we're running around being like, let's get these bugs signed up to vote. You know, let's register
it's
these
just
bugs.
Like, humans are so desperate to be accepted into a group. Like, it is really incredible where I'm like, hearing you guys do this and I'm like, wait, I'm not doing this? Like, I have to do
yeah,
this.
That's the power
I'm pretty
of
sure
propaganda.
Joel is the Kwisatz Haderach. Because I will follow him. I will follow him.
But I've seen some like fan made art and stuff, like propaganda posters for Helldivers. It's all really, really well done stuff.
Wow,
so I'm loving
and
the
then
fan
there's
art.
A, there's fun. This we could go forever, but there's people who will be like, "Hey, what if? Do you guys ever think that like we attack the bugs first, and like then like there'll be people who are skeptical of the government,
treason.
All the other players are like treason, and they'll kill them."
I want to see that in the subreddit, like that person, like removed.
No, it's happening. Like, yeah, it's funny. Yeah. People play that role in game and just get murdered. Like, no, that's treason.
That's great.
That's treasonous talk if I've ever heard it.
Absolutely. I don't want to go on vacation. I'm going to bug war. Damn it. And
no.
Yeah, what a combo of two things I didn't ever think would happen. But man,
I love it. This is a great topic. Good choice, guys. And I'm just good choice to these developers.
Yeah.
I love that this game exists. That's a hoot.
Thank you, Paul Verhoeven, for a great movie.
That absolutely.
This game.
Love Starship Troopers so much. Love Paul Verhoeven. Mm-hmm. And about Helldivers, I want to say, I'm going to predict this, I think, could get nominated for like Game of the Year.
I was thinking early Game of
wow.
the Year.
Such a surprise hit. It's not
it's
the
so
kind of game that,
early.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It'll get nominated and probably win Best Live Service if they keep it up.
Yes. I
yeah,
would think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, depending on what like big like single player type games come out this year, I think this has a definite shot. Like this says, I mean, it's been in the conversation so much. Like everybody I know is like playing and stuff, so it's got the longevity.
Like Jacob, honestly, not in the honeymoon period here. You honestly think like this is something just from the squad, team based combat, the fun, the respecting your time. Like you see yourself playing this for a while.
Yeah, even if it gets old after a while and I take a break and then come back after a couple months, like it has replay value. And if they keep adding content, yeah, I think it could go on for a long time. And you can look at the numbers, the drop off, the normal drop off for a game, like after it comes out after a couple months, like it kind of peters out, but this game has remained very strong. Like the community is still very into it. So
man, poor fucking Final Fantasy. I don't think anybody's buying that game right now because of that. So.
Mm-mm. And nothing expires. Like if they release content, you don't lose it if you didn't play that season. You can always get anything that's been released. Like
similar
not
to
cool.
Halo like Infinite has the same thing where all their past battle passes are
not Fortnite-y. I didn't know that.
Because that plays into the whole FOMO thing where it's like you have a limited time to finish this battle pass. And if
they
you don't
do that,
you can never get these skins. Whereas like, do it at your own pace. We're not going to waste your time and money. Like, that's what they really value.
So I put 400 hours plus in Halo Infinite. Like this has replaced Halo. Like that the group that we would play Halo with, they're the group that's playing this with us. Like it's very much taken that place of like the co-op shooting, even though it's not PvP.
Wow.
It's all those same people. So I think this is what we're going to be doing.
Same for me
in the evenings.
And I still play Fortnite too, but I've been playing less Fortnite because of this. And I'm trying to get some of my Fortnite friends into playing this. Like,
Yeah,
our friend Joe and
we got to win the
Matt
war.
Manette, who I play Fortnite with a lot. I'm saying, hey, you got to hell dive with us, man. We'll spread democracy. We'll carry you newbies, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun. I already like to run around and be. Yeah.
Graphics
it looks insane.
Look great. Yeah.
If you've got a good rig or on the PS5, I'm sure it looks great as well. Like the graphics are incredible. The physics of it all, like the chaos of like throwing wave after wave of enemy. You've got like two or three charges bearing down on you, a Bile Titan, like it's complete chaos and it's so much fun.
It's cross-platform. If I got it on PS5, I can play with you guys.
Okay. Adam plays on PS5. You can cross-play with PC. It's great.
Sign the petition to release it on Xbox. We need the Halo contingent. We need to get them signed up stat to win the war.
That's right.
Yeah. Grid stuff. I had a thought and then it was gone, but, Hell diving and Starship Trooping. What more do you want?
Basically, yeah. Game of the year, movie of the decade, the 90s.
Well, here's a thought for you, Mike. The only good bug's a dead bug.
I'm from Buenos Aires, and I say kill them all.
You know? Come on, you apes. You want to live forever?
Well, I got to start saying that in game now. Next.
That's he just starts, when he steals that from a guy he watched die earlier, you're like,
That's how you know he's about to die immediately.
Yeah, you fucking idiot.
Yeah,
I would never say that again in my life. I'd be like, well,
you're my lieutenant until you die or I find someone better.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. What a line. Until I die or find someone better.
I'm going to quit. You ain't quitting. Man. It's incredible. We didn't talk about any of this nearly enough because I love all of it. Hey, normies, if you haven't seen any of this stuff, I said earlier that I think this would be hard if you're a little younger to maybe buy into. But if you're liking this game, you think it's funny, check this movie out. Check this series out. It's pretty cool.
Starship Troopers, cult classic. Yep.
Don't be spreading any propaganda about Super Earth starting war, all right? Just saying.
Easy. Easy, citizen Mike.
Sorry. I am citizen. I'm ready to vote.
All right. And if you are enlisted for service, you can contact us at normies_like_us. Only if you subscribe to this podcast can you leave a message, citizens.
Mm-hmm. And if you give us anything under 5 stars, we will remove it.
Ministry of Truth, you will be redacted.
You'll be redacted.
Hit us up on YouTube as well. All social medias helps us out a ton. And we have been your hosts otherwise. This is, I'm going to say, Bug Colin.
Brain Bug Mike. I don't know.
And this is Jacob Rico, head of Jacob's Roughnecks. Right. Come on, apes.
You want to listen forever? Right,
show us that tattoo you got.
Death from above.
Hey, quick shout out. If you haven't seen the making of documentary for Starship Troopers called Death from Above, 40 minutes. It's fucking awesome.
I meant to watch that, so I will. All right. Oh, absolutely. Last note. There's the best thing out of Starship Troopers 3 is a song that I sent you guys. It's a good day to die. It's a propaganda song. This is late to be bringing it up, but I will listen to it when I play Helldivers now. It's the perfect energy of Helldivers is that song. Air Marshal or Sky Marshal became a pop singer in that universe and great patriotic song. So look up It's a Good Day to Die
from our Sky Marshal. All right, go spread democracy, normies. We'll catch you later.
Yep. Bye.
Liberty.
My life for Super Earth.
My name is Gandalf the Grey, and I'm imploring you to leave a like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Don't keep it secret. Don't keep it safe. Don't take me as a conjurer of cheap tricks, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Normies Like Us. Fly, you fools!